Hello, you're listening to a podcast of the best bits of Breakfasters for the week ending Friday the 13th of March. We're broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Wurundjeri Country, Australia. Coming up on this podcast, as we eagerly await the return of Monster Beer from maternity leave, I'm looking for work and reminisce, filling the floor as a wedding DJ.
Melbourne Till She Dies, Denise Scott dropped by to chat about her new show Tickety Boo, and Vanessa Tolka, our resident Robocop, came in to talk microchipping bodies.
We were graced by Australian art royalty Lily Mora, who is guest curating the new Radical Nurture exhibition at Heidi, and we end the pod on a high with a spot of eavesdropping.
Triple R.
Well, I don't even want to say it out loud because I don't want to make it true, but Jace, we've only got, what, less than 10 days with you?
Yes.
Wrapping up next Friday, the 20th, your last day.
Yeah, I've had enough. Sick of this shit. Getting up so early. Bugger that. No. Yeah. Well, because the whole time that I've been here, of course, I've been holding the fort for one Monster Beer.
Mm-hmm.
Who has been on maternity leave and is going to be back in the hot seat in, just a couple of weeks.
Just a few weeks. Mom, back will we lose you. Where are you off to?
I'll be off to, don't know yet, actually. No idea. I need to get a job.
You need a job. What are your transferable skills, do you reckon? Just good hang. Is anyone?
Yeah, just.
Good hang.
And that's one of the key transferable skills, isn't it?
It's a major one, yeah.
Who can I hang out with?
Yeah. Do you need someone to get your playlist going for a road trip?
Yes.
Got your guy?
Yep. Actually got wedding DJs. Got a few weddings coming up. If anyone needs a DJ.
Have you done a wedding before?
I've done quite a few, yeah.
Do you like it?
I do. They are very different to DJing in the front bar or at a festival or something.
What's the major request?
It's my favourite one ever would have been, one wedding. Because the stakes are higher for weddings.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, family members or people higher up in the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
It's their big day and sometimes they come up with requests on the day and they're...
Yeah, you're like, I don't have it. Or are they just the worst?
They're just hard to fit in, you know. It'll be filling the dance floor and they want an absolute slow burner acoustic track.
You're like, and you don't understand the craft.
What are you doing? But they're high up. You don't want to let... They'll get upset. And so there's lots of juggling. One family, though, they were like, we just play anything. We don't care. Just play Rasputin.
Boney M were coming out. Have they already been?
Yes. I've seen some posters up around town.
Yeah, I've seen some posters.
I was like, are you sure? Give me something, anything. They had one other classical Italian song for the first dance, and that was it. I was like, okay.
Blank slate.
Is
that harder?
It was a bit harder.
Yeah, too much pressure.
But then played Rasputin and I never will again.
Oh, it didn't go off?
Never filled a dance floor that quick. the whole wedding was just on the floor.
Wow.
It was there. So this family, half the family, Eastern European background, and it must be a wedding favourite amongst those.
Wow. Yeah. Cause I've never heard it at a wedding. I've heard of Nutbush.
Yeah, Nutbush. Imagine Nutbush times, I would say times 10.
They didn't have a dance to it, did they?
A lot of foot stomping.
Yeah.
Like really, because it's got quite a pulsive beat, that track.
Yeah. Does this happen down here? Is this just a Queensland thing where Eagle Rock, everyone takes their pants off?
Eagle Drop.
Oh,
I've only ever witnessed this in New Zealand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've embraced it at weddings too.
So all the guys drop their pants around their ankles and then they just kind of waddle around the dance floor to Eagle Rock.
Yes.
Not happening down here.
I haven't seen it yet.
Start something.
There is that crossover between... in New Zealand, everybody is very fond of the Gold Coast.
Yeah,
there's
a bit of cross culture. We both say togs.
I say togs.
You say togs?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. No bathers. What are you, Dan?
Yeah, I'm taking off my jocks for Eagle Rock. Don't worry about it.
Go on, jocks.
Yeah.
Well, you're taking it a step further. The jocks stay on.
How come Rasputin was a dark horse? I'm surprised.
Rasputin used to take his jocks off.
Yeah, that's right.
Famously.
Antox, he'd take it all off.
I've got a six-year-old. It's his favourite song.
Is it?
Mm.
How did he stumble on it?
I think his grandmother.
It's an incredible
Chucking
song.
Chucking a bit of Rasputin on.
The lyrics, what a story.
Just... And then how do you maintain it after that?
You can't.
So that's why you'd never play it again. It has to be a closer.
Well, yeah, I didn't realise it was such a vital part of this wedding. So I probably chucked it on at like 10 or 10:30 or something.
Yeah.
At a wedding, are you allowed to, the rules go away a little bit and your dignity obviously takes a hit and you have to subsume your musical ethics for the greater good. Are you allowed to give it more than one spin?
I have done that before, but I wish I'd done it again on
just
this one occasion.
Just wall-to-wall Rasputin.
Well, yeah, maybe chuck it a remix or something. Great. It was absolutely stunning.
You're underselling yourself and your skill set. I mean, you're a bird watcher as well.
Yeah, saw our tawny mate. Saw the tawnies this morning, or just one of them. There are two of them that have popped up along the creek.
How far away are they from each other?
Oh, I'd say 100, probably 100 metres.
Okay.
Yes. So, yeah, DJing,
bird watching.
Great combo, actually. Yeah.
If you can get them both going at once.
Yeah.
They probably don't work, do they? A bit of too much noise for the twitchers.
Yeah. It's a delicate balance.
Need like a twitcher after party.
I thought you wanted to see them flying.
Yeah, get them out.
Sorry.
But are you getting emotional or philosophical or what's the...
Getting grateful, I would say. Yeah, grateful for, just lots of... I guess, prior to Breakfasters was hosting Local and/or General. What a show. Hal Langley, by the way, been doing an incredible job. Which is, Local, such a great show in that you get to give lots of artists their first leg up, where hanging out with you two on breakfast, get to meet just the variety of people that we get to meet, so much knowledge, things that you'd never even dream of.
It's very cool. Who's been your highlight? Have you had one? If you had to pick a favourite, out of me and Dan.
I would say Irvy. No. that's a good one to think about. I'll have to have a little percolate on that one. Who's been some good ones? There's been some crackers. I'm going to have to loop back there.
But also... find it interesting that you, Local and or General is exclusively, local music, but this show does allow you to really stretch your arms or your wings or whatever the imagery is. You can go all over the map.
You can. That's been fun actually. It was really nice catching Water From Your Eyes over the weekend. Actually, lots of artists on the weekend, Up Chuck as well. Lots of acts that were kind of been thrashing last year and then they get announced on a festival bill and then you get to see them live. It's very fun. Mm. So, very lucky job. It's incredible. Even just being at Golden Plains for a little bit on the weekend, the culture that, comes with Triple R is so... It's very special. I know that gets said a lot, but it is, very revered, very special, and such a great honour to be part of the culture in such a way.
Well,
every morning.
You're an essential and lovable part of the ecosystem, no matter where you are.
We'll see.
No, you take that.
Well, I love it. Yes. So if you've got any jobs, I'm on the lookout. And Mwants a Beer, going to be back very soon. I think going to be just after Easter potentially. So cannot wait for that.
And you can't get more committed than, I think, just after Easter potentially.
Yes.
Lock it in.
Triple R.
Denise Scott is a stand-up comedian, actor, columnist and best-selling author whose work across decades on the stage has earned the performer Green Room, Helpman, Directors and People's Choice Awards at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, as well as the Barry for Most Outstanding Show. And in 2023, hey. Denise was appointed a member for the Order of Australia for significant service to the arts as a comedian and an actress. Now, the darling of Australian TV and radio is back on tour with her first solo comedy show in over a decade, Tickety Boo, which delves into a dramatic personal period. To tell us about it, the national treasure, giver of good counsel and pride of Greensboro joins us now. Denise, welcome back to Breakfasters.
Oh, hey. Thank you very much. It's great to be here. And that was my son playing Geordie Lane.
What an angel.
And I've got to confess, and you will confirm this, that I didn't even notice when the track was playing. I was so busy talking about myself to all of you. So mummy didn't notice her
did
own offspring. I did,
you
actually.
Did
thank you,
did
you so him. Much.
Did you get lounge room performances or did you foster a public exhibition of, you know, family talent?
Oh, yes. I don't know what the question meant. Mm. You mean, did we encourage this?
Yeah, I know you're a family of performers, but do you perform for each other? Or
oh,
did you ever?
No, I now try and entertain my four-year-old grandson who thinks that he is funny. And I don't know where, I think it's his mum, because I never go in and say, oh, grandma's the funniest person. But he and I, yeah, we'll perform for one another. But,
awesome.
Oh, and Grandpa John, my partner, he is nonstop. Like, he has set up a drum set, drums, you know, like, with
awesome.
A four-year-old, yeah, it's really relaxing.
Yes.
And, yeah, so he does a lot of that kind of thing.
Mm. What sort of shtick do you do with the four-year-old?
He likes it when I talk like this. And, how are you going, Lenny? And, but then he'll say, I'm not Lenny, I'm Dr. Gleeland. So, and then I meet Dr. Gleeland's five cousins, who are also Dr. Gleeland, and they're all women.
Oh, wow,
so,
we're on.
And then the other day, he was Dr. Gleeland and Grandpa John said he had a headache, and so Dr. Gleeland put his hand on John's forehead and said, that's not a headache, that's anger. He's four. So I don't know what's going on in our house, but, wow,
that's,
it's wild.
Mm. Interesting with the names of shows. I mean, you've had, of course, disappointments and regrets. Tickety Boo is conspicuously optimistic.
It is, isn't it? And why? Well, I guess because I'm alive, that's a pretty good reason to be positive, because I had quite a long period of treatment with cancer, breast cancer, and, you know, and so, well, here I am and back performing.
Mm. Congrats. That's
which
huge.
Is,
it's awesome.
It's huge at 70,
yeah.
Yet alone, I was going to swear, being, you know, really not great shape, but... But, yeah, so it's exciting.
That's so good. I remember seeing Cher a couple of years ago.
Oh! It's amazing how many people connect me and Cher. What a segue.
And she started the show by saying, I'm 70-something years old. Think about what your grandparents are doing at the moment. And you're on stage.
Yeah. Yes.
That's so funny that Cher's dissing everyone's grandparents.
Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly. Put on your shirt.
Yeah.
But I was reading that you're on set and you find time to like sob quietly to yourself, I suppose.
On set, you mean for Mother
and Son?
Son,
I think, yeah.
Yeah, so first series of Mother and Son, I was diagnosed just before we started filming. That was in 2023. And Yeah, it was wild because I had to start chemotherapy and it was quite full-on chemo. I mean, chemo is anyway, but, yeah, I had started chemo straight away. So I was had to move to Sydney, start chemo, start filming, get a wig made for the character, and I was if I wasn't actually speaking on camera, I was slumped in a chair or shitting my pants. Because it's one of the effects of chemo, and yeah, it was a really full on time, but did it, you know. And
and it strikes me that you're on, you mentioned with us that you were on television and you got diagnosed via viewer. You had like an eye going on?
A what?
A droopy eye? I don't know.
Have you got that in touch? Was something else.
Exactly.
Oh my God, the droopy eye. So yesterday, yeah. I'd forgotten about it. Yes. But I don't know what that ended up being, except I had a droopy eye, I guess.
But this diagnosis was from a doctor.
This was from, yes, so I woke up one morning and I had my right breast was really burning hot and red. And get this, get ready for the joke. I've always had red hot tits. But yeah, that's Zoe Coombs-Marr actually gave me that for nothing.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a free gift.
Have you spent a life giving? Do you think you're a, I know you're not allowed to say, but are you a generous person? Do you go, oh, here's a tag for that?
Or? Oh my God, no. I can't think of tag lines for myself. Notorious. Can't think of them. Don't know. My mind doesn't work in that joke fashion. I'm hopeless. Yeah. Hopeless. So if someone says, oh, could you give feedback or could you, I say absolutely not. I couldn't help you if your life depended on it. I don't know about this. I don't.
Yeah. But well, you famously say that you have no imagination.
Yes, I don't. If it hasn't happened.
Yeah, people are like, I'll just make it up. I'm like, no.
Yeah. If it's like, and that's why I thought, well, I better, you know, milk this cancer business because that's all that's happened in the last 3 years. And it has been quite extraordinary and lots of there were very funny events, you know. I could tell you that on this first day of mother and son filming, not only is there the fear because people have been so – it felt like Australia was going to implode with horror that it was being remade and that I was doing the Ruth Cracknell. I can barely say her name without fearing for my life. I was.
Crackheads are fans, and they know.
Right. I didn't know.
No,
I mean. Anyway, is that a thing?
No.
Or was that a joke?
It was a joke.
See? That's brilliant. I, for 3 years, never entered my head.
Yeah, it was the brain.
It's great. It's in my show now. You know, right. Another freebie. Yep. I don't pay for taglines. But yeah, so first day, it was like a 40 degree day in Sydney. I've never been in a sitcom, yet alone standing in the shoes of Ruth Cracknell. I've started chemo. I am an absolute wreck of anxiety and panic attacks and from the drugs, from the chemo drugs, and from natural fear. And I'm so out of my mind. I'm being driven to the first location, the first. We haven't filmed a scene. And get there, and I'm so thirsty, I just grab this bottle of unopened water that was in the side passenger door. I was in the back seat and guzzled, and, yeah, it wasn't water. It was hand sanitizer that had liquefied in the heat. And I hadn't just sipped it. I mean, I guzzled it voraciously. And then I'm like, I didn't know because I didn't wear glasses then, so I didn't know what I'd drunk.
The taste is gone as well.
I didn't know. I thought, oh my God, is this kerosene? Like, what? It was burning. My whole insides were burning, and I'm trying to get out of the car, but the child locks on, and it was just a nightmare. Anyway, I went on and filmed, and really pissed. Because it's 95% proof. Hand sanitizer is nearly all alcohol. So ever since, I just have a quick swig of hand sanitizer when I'm a bit, you know, need a bit of calming.
Like a prison inmate. Oh, yeah. God. This is, we were talking off air and you said you never leave Melbourne or maybe Australia. Like it's never even occurred to you. Briar Hill, what's going on there? It's a suburb I've never heard
Briar
of.
Briar Hill?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Briar Hill, yeah. I never hung out there.
Mm.
There was nothing to do in Briar Hill. There may be now.
Yeah.
But I have no idea. Greensboro is where I was born, and truly it was so long ago that the roads weren't made. The toilets were outdoors and you had the pan man come every week. You walked, you know, we got a horse and cart to school.
No, yeah.
We didn't.
Oh, damn it.
Damn it.
But we did walk on our own and across like a main street and down this kind of cliff face.
Mm.
Yeah.
Whereas these days it's all snowflakes and it's the nanny
would
state.
Been,
yeah.
The cliff face would have been uphill both ways to and from school.
Yeah.
So this show, Tickety Boo, it's you've taken it on the road already.
Yes, performed at the Opera House.
What?
I know, isn't that gorgeous? It sounds great, doesn't it? And it was great. It's what a beautiful venue, but you know, I like to say it was in the small venue, but it was great.
Well, no one's got a Gundy head asking you to put the asterisk on next to Opera House.
Yeah. It was wonderful. I'm going to burp. I just did a little burp then. This is the thing. It happens every time I perform now. I just burp and it has to come out. It's just little, but yeah. I feel compelled.
Just always creating content.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it works really well. Wait till I do a second one. I can't believe it.
That's the callback, the second one.
4-year-old will love it. Okay, Denise Scott is in Tickety Boo. It's part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. 25th of March, it kicks off until the 5th of April. At beautiful venue. This is a comedy theatre fun place.
Yes, which I love. Mm. I love the comedy theatre.
Yeah. Is the Opera House a bit... Is the carpet a bit dated? Is it parts of the Sydney Opera House that...
Yes. Yes, it really does need a revamp. Mm. And that shell business, you know, shape, the sails.
Knock it down.
Get over it. Get over it.
Exactly.
Like, let's get more contemporary, simple.
A two-stroke or something.
Yeah.
All right, well, Denise Scott, like we say, is starring in Tickety Boo solo show. You have to get tickets at, comedyfestival.com.au?
You have to.
Yes,
you really do. I'm 70, who knows? Who knows how long I'll be?
Independently yours, Triple R.
102.7.
We're talking tech with Vanessa Dole. Good morning, Vanessa.
Good morning. I love being welcomed with a bit of tadpole on the promo there.
Bloody
love to hear it.
What a hero.
How are we, Breakfasters?
Pretty good.
Bracing myself, as always, to talk technology.
Oh, I love that. Don't brace yourself. We're trying to bring you some good news stories to intersperse with the tech dystopia that we live in and adore, frankly. There's been a bit of news in the States. Washington State, in fact, has passed a bill that on paper sounds like the premise of a bit of a thriller. The bill is HB 2303, and it prohibits employers from requesting, requiring, or coercing any employee to have a microchip implanted in their body.
What?
It passed the Senate unanimously and the House 87-6. Which is interesting. Yeah, that's right. Who knows? And it now goes up to the governor to sign. Now, there are no known cases of a US employer actually asking for this, actually, you know, enforcing it and mandating it. The committee reportedly laughed when it came up for a vote before advancing it. And this is a line really being drawn before anyone has crossed it. One of the bill's sponsors framed it simply as, an employee with a microchip stops being an employee. They are essentially being dehumanized into corporate equipment. Fair enough. Okay, Fines start at $10,000 for the first offence, doubling for each subsequent violation, which you can imagine if it's through a set of employees could, you know, vastly ramp up.
$10,000 to microchip someone.
There you go.
That's worth it.
So
yeah, they would take that. For sure.
This is the volume. When I read this, I thought let's revisit a brief history of implanting microchips. Have you ever been tempted yourselves?
No. But I have seen it worked, and it can be for, you know, people with spinal injuries.
Oh, there's all sorts of accessibility reasons, and, you know, is it really that far of a hop, skip and a jump from, you know, your implanons or your, you know, for sort of, you know, birth control type reasons or diabetes type reasons.
I met
all sorts of things.
I met a guy in a bar and he had something in his hand and he said, "You scan that, you get my Snapchat." And I said, "No, thank you."
Wow.
Hot. Yeah. Gorgeous. We love it. Anyway, let's just jump back a little. Hopefully you can hear the little wink in my voice. The first documented microchip implant in a human was back in 1998. There was a British cybernetics professor, does sound very Terminator, Kevin Warwick, had an RFID device slipped under his skin at Reading University. He used it to open doors and to track his movements around his building. Like, you can't continuously track an RFID. It can track as you go through different RFID sensors.
Yep.
And 9 days later, he had it removed. It now sits in a science museum in London, which is maybe the correct place for that particular one. But the technology itself is pretty simple. It can be a glass-encased chip, roughly the size of a grain of rice, injected under the skin, readable by a scanner. The same technology is used in many pets. Of course, there are a few different variations of what you can use nowadays. But by the mid-2000s, there were communities of voluntary adopters in lots of different places for different reasons. One of them, in 2006, an Ohio security firm called CityWatcher voluntarily offered to chip their employees for access to a secure room. They didn't have to. They could have access other ways, but a bunch of them chose to and just experimented with it. There are lots of hobbyists who have chipped their own hands, as you're saying, and some use it as keys for their office. One Swedish researcher used it to use them and would run implant parties, so social events where you could chip yourself and, you know, design your chip to unlock your phone or make payments or replace your wallets. Now, you've got to remember at this point, things like smart watches weren't necessarily playing these roles for people.
Do you think they're furious once they came in?
Yeah. Oh. You'd have to think, like, way less invasive. Yeah. Like, just way easier. But at the further end of the spectrum, British biohacker Left Anonym has implanted over 50 devices in her own body, including a Wi-Fi router in her upper arm. I mean,
how do you turn it off and on, though?
Oh, I don't know. You got to think you just do some arm curls and that, like, resets.
You got to make that fart noise under your armpit.
plays havoc when you're trying to stream things at the gym. Anyway, it's really rough, but. But lots of biohackers, you know, say everyone should have the right to alter their own body as they see fit, as long as it doesn't involve anyone else, which seems fair to me. And this is not unique to, you know, other places, far-flung locations. As far back as 2018, Melbourne researcher and then PhD candidate in the Department of Computing and Infosystems at Melbourne Uni, and now Dr. Kayla Heffernan implanted both an RFID and NFC chips in her hand to use Mikey to unlock doors at home and to experiment with just a range of other accessibility opportunities, which was actually really fascinating, and did it in a way that Mikey were okay with, like they didn't block the device or anything.
Yeah, because they're like, is someone paying? Thank God.
Well...
That's weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in Sydney, someone did it with an Opal card and the public transport there did block it and say this is not an authorised use of our things. They didn't love it back then.
They hate payments.
So, look, it sits within this kind of fascinating broader philosophical movement called transhumanism, which explores the idea that technology can and should extend our human capabilities beyond biological defaults. But as someone who's seen Escape from LA and Escape from New York, I'm not sure I'm quite as comfortable with it. Absolutely. There are UK firms like biotech. I mean, there are firms all over the world, but there's a particular UK firm like Biotech who's been developing implants for people with things like rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, motor neuron disease, so that things like doors unlocking as a wheelchair user approaches, you start going, okay, this is starting to be a trade-off where, you know, there's a tiny ick factor putting something under your skin, but once you get over that and you go, the utility is worth more to me than stressing about that, you go, fantastic. Or things that can moderate, you know, dosed medicine coming into your body. You're like, okay, very interesting, you know. But then there are artists who always take really interesting views on technology and you know, kind of push our understanding of what we think is a reasonable use. There's an artist, Neil Harbison, who was born completely colourblind. He had antennae implanted in his skull to convert colour into audible vibrations through the bone so he could hear colour to augment a sense that he was lacking in.
Really?
Fascinating, right?
Yeah. And
then his collaborator, Moon Rebus, they've all got great names. Presumably they're changing their names into these fantastical things, implanted seismic sensors in her feet that vibrated with earthquakes worldwide, which she translated into dance. This is one you would want to be able to turn on and off.
Yeah.
Just trying to sleep, but there's always earthquakes somewhere. Anyway, fascinating.
That's wild.
Oh, and there's Robocop, of course.
Definitely Robocop. Poor, poor, tragic Robocop. Really not the model. But look, coming back to the Washington legislation, if signed, because it's very nearly approved, it will be the 14th US state to pass this kind of protection. Arkansas, California, Nevada, Wisconsin, and 10 others are there, but they're really varying in scope. Nevada goes the furthest, banning even voluntary workplace chipping programs. So that's interesting, where they're like, voluntary is too far in a work-related context. Very interesting stuff. Internationally, Sweden, where the technology is most openly embraced with tens of thousands of voluntarily chipped people, we notice the trends there are for transit, so same as like 4 hours sort of public transport, gym access, and emergency contact storage. They've been watching too much Jason Bourne. It's just fascinating stuff, right? But, you know, it's genuinely voluntary. And as with most areas where tech is advancing really quickly, the broader legal framework is catching up in places all around the world.
What strikes me is that it's the fact that I'm not sure I'm familiar with preemptive legislation in the tech space. It's usually the horses bolted so far out before anyone gets their act together.
Yeah.
But Washington State is doing something.
They're ahead of
there
it.
There you go.
Well, you would think in that, what's that town Elon Musk is setting up?
Oh,
like building his whole, they're going to be chipped.
This listener who says they're blue heelers looking at the owner with a WTF expression.
Oh. Good enough for me, but not thee. Those blue heelers, so clever.
Vanessa, any concluding thoughts?
No, I mean, I just think it's very interesting to watch these trends as long as, you know, it all comes down to agency, doesn't it? And that's all we want, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, give us your QR code Snapchat during the song as well.
DNA is getting used for, what's the really fast processing?
Like quantum?
Quantum, yeah.
How so? We'll have to look into this.
Yeah, maybe we'll loop back.
But thanks, Jess.
We're turning into robots and robots are turning into us.
Bloody oath. Okay, microchipping bodies. When are you back on Bite Into It?
Next Wednesday.
Okay, beautiful. Love your work. Vanessa Tolko, thanks so much.
Thanks, team.
Melbourne's own Triple R.
Lily Mora is a third-generation art dealer who has worked at major institutions, including Tate in London and the NGV, and is founder of the arts platform Sunday Salon, dedicated to making art buying more accessible and championing a new generation of artists and collectors. Lily is the curator of a new exhibition called Always Modern, Radical Nurture, that unfolds throughout the rooms of Heidi Cottage and celebrates Heidi as a place where living differently became a creative act and that ultimately allowed Australian modernism to take root. And here to tell us about it, the cultural torchbearer and Melbourne creative royalty joins us now. Lily, welcome to Breakfasters.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Can you tell us about your upbringing and how your approach and relationship with art has fostered and flourishes to this day?
Yeah, so I suppose I grew up very immersed in the art world, always visiting my dad's gallery and going to openings, although I think, truth be told, as a kid I was more excited to go and play on his computer at the gallery than see the artworks. But, yeah, grew up, there were always a lot of artists staying in our home and visiting us, and I was that kid that would pretend to go to bed and then sneak out and go and sit on the staircase and eavesdrop all the adult conversations. So I was definitely, yeah, immersed from a young age and caught the bug early, I suppose.
Did you ever – I ran into some friends who over the weekend, they're in some, like, pretty big bands, but they're kids – hate, they're just like, nah, you're daggy.
Yes, I think you either go one way or the other, and I, yeah, for better or for worse, have followed the footsteps.
That's...
And when you got that bug, what do you recognise from yourself at that age to what you're trying to implement and enact now?
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, being a third generation art dealer definitely carries a certain weight with it, and it's a very special thing. But I think what I'm doing is quite different to what my father did, just as what he did was also quite different to what his dad did. But I think what connects us through the generations is a real love for getting other people excited about art. And that's kind of something I love about my work with Sunday Salon. So it's really designed to kind of create that bridge between new emerging collectors and emerging Australian artists. So it's a way to help people find a way into the art world.
Mm. And what was the friction there that Sunday Salon overcomes?
Yeah, I think a lot of people perhaps don't know where to start when it comes to collecting art, despite having a love of art. And I also felt that there, you know, we already have so many brilliant traditional art galleries here in Australia. So I wanted to do something a little bit different that focuses more on early career stage artists and provides a more kind of flexible and fluid way of working with them to provide that sort of pivotal early stage support.
Mm.
And actually at the time the name Sunday Salon was actually a little nod to Sunday Reed, which is quite a nice connection to have now wound up working with Heidi on this show.
Yeah, that's so tell us about how that ethos maps on to Heidi.
Yeah, well, I suppose my kind of starting point for thinking about radical nurture and a part of the Heidi story that's always really fascinated me is just how radical John and Sunday Reed were in the way that they supported young artists. So they were so much more than just art patrons. They became really enmeshed in artists' lives and created this environment for artists to come and sort of read books in their library and stay for long lunches. But many artists also lived there for periods of time and sometimes even received financial support. And they were quite visionary in terms of the fact that a lot of these artists at the time weren't necessarily appreciated elsewhere. But John and Sunday really kind of believed in their talents and nurtured them, which is interesting to look at today now that these artists are kind of very big names.
Yeah. That's so cool. Someone was asking me recently about getting their music out there.
Mm.
I was like, that's the easy bit. The hard bit at the moment is building a community or contributing to a community.
Yes.
And, you know, you think about, Heidi, but also, you know, you can go back to, like, the Impressionists, and it's kind of the outcasts or the people that aren't appreciated coming together, supporting each other, giving each other a leg up. That's the beautiful bit and the hard bit at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one work in the show by Sydney Nolan called Moon Boy, which at the time when it was exhibited, the conservative art critics of the day kind of said it looks like a toilet seat and totally dismissed it.
Mm.
But, yeah, John and Sunday definitely saw something else.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Well, what does it mean to artists to receive that support? How, in what way is it life-changing?
Yeah, I do think it's interesting to look at the kind of broader cultural impact of what it means to support young artists. But I think in today's world it can be really challenging to get your work out there. It can be challenging to find gallery representation and obviously really hard to sustain a living from making art when you're kind of in the early stages. So it does mean that many give up or end up having to pursue other careers to pay the bills. So it can be the difference between, you know, whether a career in the arts is viable or not.
Well, tell us what else you've wrangled for Always Modern.
So Radical Nurture, it really looks at the kind of the early years at Heidi through the lens of nurture and care and the environment that was fostered by the Reeds and how that led to the birth of Australian modernism. So one of my favourite kind of sections of the show is actually in the library of the Heidi Cottage. We've got in there some brilliant cardboard cutouts by Charles Blackman, and he originally created them as kind of little tools for his kids, to delight his kids, but actually found the medium of cardboard quite interesting to work with. So he later recreated a whole series of these paper sculptures, which we've got on display in the library. And Heidi kindly let me sort of take out books off the shelves and display them kind of nestled in amongst the books there. So because he made them originally for his kids, I quite liked the idea of it being almost like a game of hide and seek, because you try and sort of spot them dotted around the room.
Oh. What about when you're setting it all up? Was it must be fun to wander around?
So much fun, yeah, and really special, because I've been going to Heidi since I could walk and talk, really. So
awesome.
It's really nice to have been able to spend this time trawling through their fantastic collection. And there's a mural, if you've been to the cottage, there's a mural by Mirka Mora, who was my grandmother, on the front windows there, which is actually one of my happiest memories at Heidi, was being with her on that day when she created the mural. And I thought I was actually just giving her a lift to Heidi, but she said, no, get out of the car, grab a brush, you have to help me. So,
yes.
So we had a beautiful day.
In one day?
Together.
Is it the windows as you're walking into the cottage?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, that is amazing.
So it was lovely, yeah, having those memories as we're there installing the show as well.
God. What does that memory, does it, like the grunt, the difficulty or the work, because you were there during the making of it and you've been at the ground floor of so much of it. It's easy to romanticise art making, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it is a discipline, and, you know, and you were there observing it. That's
extraordinary. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for Mirka it was an absolute need to paint. She had to paint every day. But she was always quite joyful as she did it. So, yeah, that day in particular was a very happy one.
Mm. What about how's Heidi going in terms of the tourists? What's the makeup? And this exhibition has been going for how long, you say?
It's just been open a couple of weeks, actually.
Okay.
It's quite new.
And what are you observing about the groups that are coming through?
Yeah, it's been great. It's been really lovely to see lots of students come through, actually. And I gave a talk the other day and we had some high school kids there with so many brilliant questions, which I just loved. It's lovely to see young people coming and engaging with these kind of stories from art history. It was fantastic.
What do the kids want to know?
Well, these ones in particular were photography students, so they were kind of, yeah, getting nice and close to Albert Tucker's fantastic photos, which are in the show, and, yeah, they were very keen on those, which was nice.
Oh. And do you feel as though another Heidi is happening under your tutelage, or is it more dispersed, or is it we'll never have another Heidi? Can you give us the lay of the land about if people are getting involved in the arts?
Yeah, I think they are. And, I mean, I just guest curated this show, so I can't take credit for the wonderful work that the amazing Heidi team do. But I think what's fantastic is seeing younger generations still engaging with these stories and the Heidi legacy. And I think, yeah, it's always a pleasure seeing young people learn these stories for the first time. And I think for me what's so nice is the Moras and the Reeds have had such a long-standing history. They've been long-time collaborators and conspirators. So in a way, me working with Heidi on this show kind of feels like that relationship is still ongoing, which is great.
Definitely.
And just quickly, what about Melbourne and making Melbourne and Victoria special? You know, you're a global art figure. I'm wondering what we need to do, or what are we doing right to create the city and the community that we love?
Yeah, we need to support our young and emerging artists. And I think, yeah, there needs to be different ways of working with them, with engaging with them. I mean, arts funding is a whole nother conversation, which we probably don't have time to get into now. But I think, yeah, providing that support to early stage artists is crucial, really.
Cool. Well, it's very exciting. Always Modern. Radical Nurture is, as we say, it unfolds throughout the rooms of Heidi College. And it's been guest curated by Lily Mora. For more information, head to heidi.com.au. The exhibition's on till August. Great to have you here, Lily.
Thanks
Thank
very
you.
Much for having me.
Thanks, Lily.
Triple R on FM, digital, online, via the app.
It's getting pretty close
to Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So
saw some nice posters in the foyer, actually.
Oh, yeah.
One of them's mine. It was.
Forget about the others.
Very colourful. Great poster.
Thanks, mate. It was very stressful.
Oh, what part?
The photo shoot. You always have to name the show before you've written it. And you're like, what am I doing? And then you send it to the graphic designer and they put something together. And then you just have to look at yourself so much.
Mm.
And it's like, do I hate this poster or do I just hate my face? So there's a lot of that. But also...
Is that... Sorry to interrupt.
No,
there was a... we've mentioned on air before, but there was a poster around town for the soliciting work from a graphic designer. And it said... and you would pull the number off or whatever. Yeah. And it said... it was quite passive-aggressive.
Is this the one with they'll build you a website?
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not your therapist.
Yeah.
And it's like, what a therapist would listen. Yeah, that's what...
Well, yeah, and I'm wondering if the designer... of whether you had a conversation like, I don't know whether whether I just hate myself or whether I don't
I hate
like
your work. Like, this is so... You've got to talk to someone else about this. Yeah, maybe I've inspired that post. I've got to get the show ready. We maybe need to make up a couple of minutes. And I went and did a dive into the notes app yesterday to try and find some ideas, see what I've got. But I stumbled across, and I forgot I had this, is I used to just keep a note of anything I overheard out in public.
Yes, love this.
Yeah, I wish, I don't know why I stopped doing it, but this is from, the last entry was November 2024.
Okay.
So it's a couple of years old. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is exactly the reason I do not wear any headphones out and about. I don't do it on the tram. I don't do it on a walk. I'm all ears. I'm taking notes. So here's a couple of highlights. All right.
When you say highlights, is it all on... you've assembled
all of these. These are just bits and pieces. Notes. Yep, I've overheard people saying out in public.
Mm-hmm.
You look like you've just eaten a bunch of small dishes.
Wow. Been having a bit of tapas, maybe.
Yeah, I think it means they're overdressed and unsatisfied is all I can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you look like you've eaten a bunch of small dishes.
That's good. What? How? I love that.
Because in my head, which is not funny, but it would be that they've just left a degustation and it's, I don't know, like a very specific observation about their dining experience. But that's amazing. Do you remember where you were or what time of day it was?
No, I wish I had left some context clues, or I've just written them out.
Oh, it's better without context.
Yeah. These are one of them. This is a mother talking about it. My daughter's an Uber driver. And then the daughter says, no, I'm not. And the mother goes, well, what are you then? And the daughter says, a sex worker.
Oh, God. Are you serious?
I mean,
where's mum getting her information?
I imagine she's confusing the gig economy, but also I do love the thought that she thought all Uber drivers were sex workers. Like, if she was like, just her at the end of every night with people going, I've got to go. My Uber's here. Jesus Christ.
Okay, wow. Times have changed.
Didn't do that in my day.
Oh, my God. And do you think, was the conversation relayed with, I'm just filling you in, or was it pride, or... because, yeah, it's... Also, by the way, do your parents talk about you, or have you had loved ones discuss you, but you know what they say when you're not around and how it differs to when you are? Can overhear it? Like, oh, Bron, she's ex.
Yeah, I know that, like, I'll tell my parents, like, oh, I got this job or I got this gig or whatever, and they go, oh, yeah, that's good. And I'm like, God, they've really given me nothing.
Oh, God,
and then I talk to someone else who's like, oh, ran into your mum. God, she won't stop going on
amazing
about how great you are.
Just
I'm
amazing.
Like, well, tell her to tell me.
Yeah. Like, play the pool.
And then tell my web designer, my therapist.
I loved this one, actually. All right, I wish I knew where I was when I heard this. Don't touch them. They're Rhonda Birchmore's Gatorades.
Wow.
That is a strong warning, isn't it?
It is.
You wouldn't go near them.
No. And I mean, you think about like Rhonda, I reckon she would leave everything out there on the floor. She'd need the electrolytes when she comes back off.
Oh, yeah.
You don't get half a Rhonda Birchmore.
No way. Even at the opening of an event, she's full Rhonda Birchmore.
She's full Rhonda Birchmore. She's never. I think at home on the lounge, she's full Rhonda Birchmore. Yeah. She's still, got the Gatorades by her side.
I wonder how many there were.
For some reason, I think they're blue as well.
That's a surprise.
Good. I'm imagining the, you see at the side.
Those little bar
like,
fridges with the glass door.
Or even, that would be awesome. Or even when you see kids sport and they've got the huge, like.
Oh, the big tub.
The big tub.
Like the one that gets poured over people at the coaches.
That's Rhonda's.
Don't you dare touch Rhonda. My next year show is going to be called Rhonda Birchmore's Gatorade.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's good and I'm proud of the worker or whoever is responsible for defending Rhonda Birchmore's Gatorade.
I'd love to have that job.
Yeah. Because you have to defend them because you get monstered.
Yeah.
In a very charismatic and rizzy way, I'm sure.
I feel like I want to start a new game.
Yeah. What's the game?
It's just whenever somebody says anything or makes any kind of claim, just dismiss it and just be like, no, I'm not. I'm a sex worker.
Yeah. No, you got that wrong. I've told you.
And then they'll be like, what? And you're like, oh, no, sorry. What?
I'm a DJ. You're a DJ, aren't you? No, I told you. I'm a sex worker.
Do we have more? It's very exciting.
Do we have more? My mum's best friend was murdered by Ivan Milat.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Just overhearing that on the street. People say these things out loud.
No way. My godfather accidentally got a ride with...
No way, Jason Moore.
You're lying.
Nah, yeah. Who was I talking about this with this recently? Somebody.
Well, it wasn't me and I forgot.
Accidentally was... Oh, no, that's right, because another friend was hitching a ride around Canberra in the 70s. And then I was like, yeah, my godfather hitched a ride in Canberra in the 70s. And a month later, his face was on the newspaper. He'd just be as a wanted man. Ivan Milat.
Wow. So he was giving some rides without...
And then so, yikes. Sorry, I've sidetracked that one.
No, that is, that's terrifying.
Yes, he was freaked out as well. I think he got a ride from Albury to Canberra.
How long's that?
About 2 or 3 hours, I reckon. Probably 3 hours.
Did he get any vibe at all of him?
Yeah. He's like, because he wanted, or maybe he went
to. So he saw the picture and he's like, not surprised.
Well, I think he was just like, whoa, I just had a crazy close call. Like,
damn.
I think he kept insisting on dropping him somewhere else and he's like, nah, I'm all good. Like, I just want to drop me back at mum's place.
Amazing. Because it was mid-90s, I want to say 1994, when his photo was plastered on the front of, say, Who Weekly. And then they had to recall the magazine and slap like a black sticker over the top.
Really?
And I'm wondering if that's one of the reasons, like did you say uncle?
Godfather.
Godfather, was one of the people who it's like, oh, we can't prejudice this. People might see the photo and you're one of them.
Oh, yeah, right.
Holy mackerel.
That is.
He really fucked it for hitchhikers for generations.
I know.
Oh, yeah. I would never. Have you ever?
I've picked up a hitchhiker, but with my dad. We had a combi, and so there was no reason. If it was just me in the back and mum in the front, like mum would be fighting with dad, like, don't pick up the hitchhiker, don't pick up the hitchhiker. But she was just overruled. And then Jace's godfather hopped in.
Jumped in.
Sorry.
No.
Are you going to keep them dry or there's more? Or
There's...
You don't have to burn through them all if you don't want. But it's amazing. Oslo Davis, friend of the show and obviously pops up on Triple all the time, he has an eavesdropping book and the things he overhears goes in cartoons and a lot.
I should send them to him.
I don't want to ask him whether he's made any of them up. Like, I don't want to know.
Oh, like yeah. Sleeping Dog Lie.
Yeah.
Keep it a mystery.
Exactly. I need to get back on it. I need to get back in the habit because like they are fun.
Yeah, it is a great. Yeah, trams, very good.
Trams are great.
Beaches or like people where places where people are gathering and having
all right,
fun.
You're starting to creep me out, Jack.
Other people's houses?
Lounge rooms?
Public bathrooms? You've tried a public bathroom?
That's right. Triple R.
You've been listening to a podcast of the best bits of Breakfasters, which is the Monday to Friday breakfast show, broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia. Feel free to get in touch with Breakfasters via Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or via the Triple R website.